Good morning and welcome to The Business of Living, the show that brings you strategies and practical solutions for managing your life and career. I'm your host, Scott Ventrella. Well, today's topic is, it relates very much to the business of living. We're going to be talking about the business of dating, why you run your dating life like your business. Of course, the premise of this show is that we can learn from other sources, let's say, such as businesses, well-run businesses. We can learn some of the best practices that they participate in to help them achieve their goals, and their corporate and professional goals. And what I really like about this, not only the topic, but our guest, is that similar thinking has gone into this. In other words, what can we learn from other sources, in this case, you know, organizations, how we manage our career and our professional lives? What can we learn from that, and how can we apply it to dating? And joining us today is Damona Hoffman. Damona is a dating expert, author, magazine columnist. She's got her own website, www.dearmrsd.com. And holds a BS in communications from Northwestern U, a graduate certificate from UCLA, and also hosts her own dating and relationship show called Dates and Mates on Cool Change Radio. Damona, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Scott.
Yeah, so I love this this idea of you know, handling your, you know, the dating situation, which I think is very complicated, especially today with today's technology. I mean, it's changed. It's come a long way from the days. And I'll just indulge me for this one remembrance. And I'm going back quite a few years ago when I was a disc jockey in a nightclub, and the nightclub was called Dial Tone. And so this was a very popular hot spot. Many young people would come, and you'd actually sit at tables, and it had telephones. And if you saw somebody you thought you might want to meet or get to know, somebody you might be attracted to, you'd actually pick up the phone and, you know, dial their table. And, you know, you'd have it wasn't completely anonymous, but they didn't necessarily, the person receiving the call wouldn't necessarily know, you know, which booth you were in or where you were calling from. We've come a long way from that, haven't we? I'm sorry?
Yeah. There's a new version of that now. It's location-based dating. So now there's a lot of websites where you can kind of check in, like using the same technology that you would on Foursquare.
Okay.
And you can see who's there. And then if there's somebody that's caught your eye, you can actually message them with your cell phone and find a place to connect in the bar. So you can still do that.
Okay. So nothing new under the sun.
Technology has evolved a little bit.
Nothing new under the sun. It's just the difference is the technology. So I love the topic, the business of dating, why you run your dating life like your business. Tell us more about that.
I'm so glad to be talking about this because it's not always a very popular way to look at dating. It's not a very romantic view of dating, but it's something I think is really important if you are focused on finding the love of your life and you're tired of dating around, or maybe you've come out of a relationship and you really want to meet someone else. I really think you have to approach it with the same sort of focus and dedication that you would if you were, you know, looking for a new job or, you know, working in a corporation. A lot of the same rules actually apply, and I'm always talking to my clients about marketing themselves. Like, when you are dating, you really need to think of yourself almost like a business product that you are selling to a potential dater, and think about your whole, all of your packaging. If you're going to be releasing a product into the marketplace, you're going to think about the pictures that you're using. You're going to think about how you talk about that product. So I really think it's important to approach your dating life in the same way.
So in other words, you got to package yourself up, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, in the right way. But how do you even go about, you know, thinking about that?
Well, it's tricky because a lot of people think, "Oh, I'm not a product, I'm a person. I don't want to put myself in a box like that." But you have to keep in mind, as you said earlier, there's so much technology out there. So many things have changed, and there are a lot of things vying for our attention, and there are a lot of people vying for our attention in different ways. We've got our cell phones attached at our hips, and they have our internet, they have our our email. They have our whole world is now buzzing every 2 seconds, trying to get our attention. So when you're trying to make a connection with someone, you really have to work harder now to sort of command someone's attention and take them away from all these other things that are pulling their eye away.
So you're not necessarily, though, talking about, for example, and I really don't know much about it. Of course, many people have heard about Match.com.
Sure.
And so, but you're not just talking about, you know, online resources for getting people's attention and getting to know people. Is my understanding correct?
No, I think that it applies to all aspects of your dating life. I think a lot of my clients, I work with them on their online dating profiles, and I think for anybody that's single, there's really no reason you shouldn't be doing online dating. But I look at it as one piece of your dating portfolio. And there I go with the business talk already.
Yeah, that's okay. I think a lot of people can understand that language.
Yeah, but it's like it's one resource that you have. And why not do it? Everybody's online. Everybody's tried it. And, you know, you really have nothing to lose. So I look at creating your online profile really as sort of a representation of it's like your dating resume in a way. And so that is one piece of the puzzle, but it's also about how you present yourself out in the world. Like if you are, say you are looking for a job, you're not only looking for a job when you send your resume out, right? You're also looking for a job when you're having dinner with friends and you are networking and you say, hey, you know, I'm looking for a job. Has anybody heard of anything at this place? Or does anybody know anyone at that place? Mm-hmm. It's the same kind of thing. Like sometimes people just assume that romance will just fall in their lap and the love of their life will just find them.
And you could be waiting a long time for that.
Yeah, it might. But why not put yourself out there and be more proactive the same way you would in business? You're not just going to wait for that opportunity. You're going to create it for yourself. So you have to put yourself in situations where you have the best chance of meeting that person that you're looking for.
I love the analogy with a job interview because, to your earlier point, many people that are out there seeking a new job, a lot of focus is put on just the resume. You know, they're not thinking about the messaging. They're not thinking about their branding. They're not thinking about necessarily, you know, how they're putting themselves out there, how they're networking and following up and all of those other things. They focus on the resume and having a nice polished resume printed on nice paper. And I think what you're saying is, and not to take anything away from the importance of a resume, but that's just one piece of the puzzle?
Sure. And I'm even looking for a job today, just having a resume. You know, it's not like it used to be where you walked in the door of a corporation and you dropped off your resume and said, put that in the human resources file, and then you got a call, right? Now you have to be on LinkedIn, and you have to be networking, and you have to use all the resources that are available to you. So it's really similar in the dating world. You need to have an online dating profile, and you need to think about your whole package so that, you know, when you're out and about, that you have your look together, and you are attractive to someone, even when you're not supposed to be looking for a date, would be attractive if you're at some place that you might meet somebody that has a shared interest, that you're presenting yourself in a way that you might attract that person that has a similar interest as you that you do.
And you work with both men and women?
I do. It really kind of goes in waves, and sometimes I'm working with more men. When I first started, I was working with a lot of guys that just really didn't know the dating rules, and so I would help them. And now I have a lot of female clients and a lot of people that are very busy that are, you know, sort of married to their job and have found that they actually want to be married to another person instead.
I find that a lot here in the New York City area where and in my consulting business, I work with both men and women, and also as an adjunct professor at a business school, Fordham University in mm-hmm. Midtown Manhattan. Many single men and women in my classes, and it seems to be the same issue where they're so busy with their career It's so difficult. You would find this hard to believe with 8 million people or so in the greater New York area, that, you know, for them to find people. But that seems to be kind of a regular refrain that coming from these folks. Do you find there a difference between, you know, when you're working with a male client versus a female client? Do you give them, is it a different roadmap? Do you give them a different, you know, different advice? Because I would imagine there's got to be, speaking as a male, there's going to be some kinds of differences there.
There are definitely a lot of differences, but I really treat all of my clients as individuals because each of their circumstances are completely different and their self-image is different based on, you know, how they grew up, what their past relationship history is. So I really create a plan that's tailored for each person, and I really try to stretch my clients beyond their comfort zone because if what they were already doing was working for them, they wouldn't be coming to me in the first mm-hmm. place. So I have to sort of stretch, you know, if they're not used to going out maybe by themselves and being approachable, I have to give them assignments where, like, I had a client who, she loved sports, and what guy doesn't love a girl who loves sports? And she would go to sports bars and watch football every Sunday with her girlfriends. And I said, how many guys have you met that way? And she said, well, I don't really talk to anybody there. I just talk to my friends that I come with. So her assignment was, you need to go to the bar with the intention of meeting people and not just watching the game. I know you want to see the score and you want to see what's happening, but you have to talk to at least two men that you don't know. Mm. And, you know, totally changed her dating life just by using the resources that were already available to her and just by approaching her life in a different way and really being strategic about it. Because, you know, as I said earlier, people think that, you know, that Cupid will hit them with his arrow and it'll just magically happen. And you have to make yourself approachable. You have to really be creative about how you're putting yourself out there if what you've been doing in the past hasn't been working for you.
So here's your client, and you give her a homework. And I love the assignment, but she's now got to go to the sports bar, and she's got to approach, you know, one or two guys. That's, that could spell some trouble. You're not saying, hey, just, you know, if somebody approaches you, you want to be responsive. You're saying you have to initiate. And that's where I would think that could be very, because usually, and again, maybe because it's been a long time. Thankfully, I've been married for, it's going on 21 years. So thankfully, I haven't had to, think about that. But I'm thinking back in my days, it was, you'd never, I mean, if a woman approached you, it'd be terrific, but it was, you hardly ever would see that happen. It was always the other way around. I'm sure things have changed to some degree, but how did she do? How did she do with her assignment? What was her experience?
Well, you know, she had a hard time with it at the beginning, but that's the whole point, is that, you know, I stretch them beyond what they're comfortable with. But, you know, it's just as you said, like, it's not about, she doesn't have to go and ask the guy out. All she has to do is make herself accessible to him. And as you said, it would be great if a girl walked up and talked to you. That's all she needs to do is open the door. But if she's sitting with her group of friends and being closed off,
hiding in a corner, yeah,
she's not going to open the door for that opportunity. But I do think the rules have definitely changed. I think online dating has changed a lot. And I'm always encouraging all of my clients, both men and women, to be very proactive online. Because the perfect person might be there for you, but you just might not be coming up in their searches because maybe they're searching in a 5-mile radius and you live 7 miles from them. Or maybe you are, like, with my husband, he was 1 year younger than the dating range that I was searching. So, like, when I got an email from him, we met on a site called nerve.com, and I got an email from him, I was like, this is the guy. Why didn't I find him? And then when I looked, I saw he was just outside of my search criteria. But had he not written to me, we would have both been on that site and just been ships passing in the night. So, you know, you really have nothing to lose. You have to be proactive in putting yourself out there and making yourself in being able to make those connections.
Now, did your husband, or at the your husband, your now husband, did he know at the time that that you were looking, that he was outside of your age criteria?
He did.
He did.
He did. And he had to. He said he thought about it for a couple of days because he said, "Well, I didn't exactly fit what you had put down. You know what you were looking for," and so I thought, "Well, maybe I shouldn't write to her." And I always say to my clients, don't go by what people think that they want. It's the same thing. How many job interviews have you gone on where, you know, you read the job description and you said, I don't fit it exactly, but I'm going to apply anyway and tell them why I think I'm right for that
exactly.
job.
Exactly. Perfect example, because it hardly – and I, when I'm coaching younger people on their job search, I'll say, you know, it's important to know about the job description, but very rarely, even when you get hired, it's like, wait a minute, this isn't what I was hired for.
Yeah, that's true. Sometimes that happens in relationships too.
Yeah,
that,
well,
this is not what I signed up for.
Yeah, it's not what I. No, here's what I'm interested in though, because I from other single friends, I hear things like, well, gosh, you know, they had a picture that maybe not as far as photoshopped, but it was 10 years younger, or they actually fibbed about their age, or maybe some small, you know, white lies. And I'm just wondering, when people come to you, can you, or I'm sure there's probably sometimes when somebody might be married, pretending to be they're single so that they can meet somebody. How do you determine whether or not they're giving you the straight scoop, or do you figure that, well, that's not even my business, I'll just take them for their word?
Well, it's all about truth in advertising. So if you're presenting yourself in a way that is not truthful, when you actually meet that person face-to-face, they're going to know that you're 10 pounds heavier or you're 5 years older or, you know, whatever it is that you've lied about. So that actually just does yourself a disservice if you're really trying to meet somebody to have a relationship. You're only shooting yourself in the foot by presenting yourself in a different light than you actually would present in person. Mm. You know, it's just like on your resume, like those little white lies, like people find out, and that can be worse than not having gotten the job or the interview in the first place. So you really need to be truthful. I usually say to my clients with their online dating portfolio or profile, they need to have photos that are really no more than a year old, especially in this day and age with, again, those cell phones that have the cameras on them and you can take pictures everywhere you go and post them onto Facebook within seconds. There's no excuse for having old photos. The technology is at our fingertips now. So especially now more than ever where, you know, the saturation of smartphones in the marketplace is as high as it is and continues growing, you really have to be current. And, you know, a lot of the dating sites are even changing into more of a blog sort of format or a social media format. So you have to keep your content fresh. Your profile does not sit there like it did in the old days, the old days of online dating being, you know, about 5 to 10 years ago.
Right.
But things move fast in technology, as you know. Mm. So it's not a static profile that just sits there and people, you know, browse through and see you and send a message. Now you have to really update on a regular basis, and you have to put up new photos because people will bypass you. It's, you know, it's kind of the same thing. I keep going back to the resume example, but if you don't have current credits on your resume, if you don't have a current job that you're coming from, people look at it and they're like, that's kind of weird. What have you been doing the last 2 years?
Good point.
Your profile is kind of the same thing. You have to keep it fresh and current.
We're speaking with Damona Hoffman, a.k.a. Dear Mrs. D, on the topic of the business of dating, why you run your dating life like your business. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after these messages here at 1490 WGCH. Welcome back. You're listening to The Business of Living. I'm your host, Scott Ventrella. We've been speaking with Damona Hoffman, a.k.a. Dear Mrs. D, on the topic of the business of dating, why you run your dating life like your business. Welcome back, Damona.
Thanks for having me.
So you all, you had mentioned at the beginning of the show, or at least I think I mentioned it, you also host a dating and relationship show, Dates and Mates. I love that title. On Cool Change Radio, I would imagine that the people that look for advice from you, the people that are, you know, seeking help, it probably a very diverse group. And what I'd like to do is maybe just focus a little bit on that, because I would imagine there's a difference between, you know, the younger single individual, let's say they're, as I mentioned, you know, the professional in New York City, or you know, pick any metropolitan area in the country. Versus the older single who has either been in and out of relationships or has been in one relationship for a long time and that didn't work, or the divorced person versus the person widowed. So I was wondering, maybe we could just kind of touch on each one of those and just get some of your thoughts on how you might, let's say, coach them, advise them, provide them with the guidance that they need.
Oh, absolutely. And I do have a lot of clients, actually, that are in their 50s and 60s and even some in their 70s that are coming to dating either after having a relationship end or looking for someone for the first time. So, you know, there are so many sites that are available to people. I think online dating is actually a great way for people that are not in their 20s and 30s to connect. Because when you're in your 50s or 60s, your life's already pretty established. You know, you've probably been in your career for a while, and you have your circle of friends, and you're not meeting anyone new. So sometimes people think, oh, online dating, it's not for you know, baby boomers or people that are coming into looking for a new relationship. But it's actually the best resource that I can think of for someone to expand their social circle when it's already kind of a little closed and formed. So there's sites that are even one of the top sites, the third ranked site in paid users is actually OurTime.com, which is a 50-plus dating site.
Mm. So
yeah, so...
So I'm curious, we'll take that age category, 50-plus years old, right? I would imagine that, you know, what happens if you've got somebody, you know, you use the analogy with the job interview. Sometimes, you know, somebody comes in and on their resume, it looks like they've had a revolving door of jobs. Doesn't look good sometimes. Or they've been in the same job for the past 25 or 30 years. I would imagine, just talking about these 50-plus-year-olds, there may be, maybe similar perceptions that either A, you know, my gosh, why can't you seem to stay in a relationship? Or, you know, you've been in one for so, whether it be a marriage that went bad or just, you know, dating the same person for all these years. I would imagine that raises red flags in the in certain people's mind.
You know, it can, but I would say actually for daters of all ages, one of the mistakes that I see people making is they lead with their broken foot. So they talk about what they don't want in a relationship rather than talking about what they do, or they talk about all the things that they hated about their last spouse, and they present those as points, like the opposite is what they're looking for in their mate. So if their last mate was messy, they say on their profile, I really want someone who's organized and punctual, and it's like I can read someone's relationship history just from looking at their first profile.
Mm.
So you want to make sure that if you are coming into it from having a past relationship, that relationship is knowledge and it is not baggage.
Yeah.
You want to use what you learned in that relationship, but not dwell on what didn't work and dwell on the past.
Very similar in a job interview. Don't badmouth your, you know, former boss,
your
former colleague. That's right. Yeah, and I've always thought of that like in a career. It is a little bit like a relationship. So some really good tips there. So in general, when and I'm sure it's not necessarily a neat, you know, linear process that you use, but overall, just take us all from the top. What is the process? So here I call you up, Damona, hey, my name is Scott. Here's my situation. I hear that you can help me find the mate of my life. So what do I do?
I would say, Scott, you can help yourself find the mate of your life. So what I do...
Well, what am I paying you for?
I'm not a matchmaker. I wish people could do it themselves, but I empower people to tap into their own knowledge and their own power. And I always say the difference between what I do and a matchmaker does is the matchmaker just brings you the fish. I actually teach you how to fish.
Ah, right. I love
it. I give people the tools to be able to go out and present themselves confidently as you would in a job interview or any other situation where you really want to make a good impression. And I teach them how to really think about their dating life in a strategic way rather than just throwing themselves out there and hoping that love will find them, really being deliberate about the choices that they make. And look, we all only have so much time on this earth. So you want to make sure that you're spending it with the people that you want to be spending it with and being happy. And, if you want to be in a relationship, giving yourself the best opportunity to find that person that's going to make you happy.
So in a couple of minutes that we have left, I love the idea of thinking first strategically, and not that you're making any promise that you can do this in 2 minutes for an actual client, but so what's the first thing you'd advise me to do?
So
talk to me like a client.
Okay, client Scott. So I would ask you what your current dating situation is, mm-hmm. how much you're going out, what you're assuming if you're coming to me because you're not happy with your dating life. So I have to get a snapshot of where you are, how often you're going out, how open you are to meeting people in different settings. Have you tried doing speed dating? Have you asked your friends if they know anyone single that they could set you up with? A lot of times people assume, oh, my friends already know that I'm single, so if they knew anybody, they would just be setting me up.
Friends
aren't thinking about setting you up. Like, they've got other stuff to worry about. You have to, same thing as if you were going to look for a job, or you were looking for a job, you're going to ask your friends, hey, I'd really like to work in this field or for this company. Do you know anyone there? So it's the same thing, getting people to tap into their own circle to make introductions for them. And then we talk about creating a profile. So again, that's part of your portfolio, and it's really important to use that, I think, as a tool. So we make sure you have photos that really represent who you are, and they are kind of selling this product of the product you.
So photos of me, at the latest party or in my, business attire or my shorts, holding a can of beer. What kind of photos?
Well, not with a can of beer.
Okay, a glass of wine. A martini glass. I guess it depends.
No, not a martini glass.
No, okay.
If you want someone to look at you as a serious partner, you really want to present yourself in the best possible light. So any photos that show you negatively, show you partying all the time, might give them the wrong impression about you.
Okay, how about
that really is what you're about?
How about a cute puppy dog? Women love cute puppy dogs.
Women do love puppy dogs. Yes, and actually, I think if you're a guy and you have a dog, that is a great tool for you to meet women. You can go to dog parks. You can go to obedience classes, and it's an automatic opener for a conversation. So, I really help people figure out who they really are and who they're really looking for. Because a lot of times people don't even know. And if you don't have clarity on that person, you might be walking past them every day and your antenna aren't up. You're not tuned in to finding the person that's really going to have the right background, the right interests, and treat you in the way that you want to be treated. You see people go into the same relationships and end up having the same complaints and saying, why do I always date guys that are jerks? Well, have you thought about what you really deserve and what you really want? Because if you have a pattern like that, you have to make a conscious effort to break it, like anything else. If you're a smoker and you don't want to smoke cigarettes anymore, you don't just wake up one day and go, I'm just not going to smoke cigarettes. You create a plan of
how you're going to get off of that drug. So being in a bad relationship in the same way can be sort of a drug that you feed off of. And if it's not serving you, you have to figure out a way to break that habit. And that's something that I help my clients with.
This is excellent, excellent advice. And I would imagine you not only very busy, but very successful, because everything that you said, and you've shared with us makes just complete sense. It's very, you know, intuitive, and I think that sometimes people, you know, not sometimes, many times, that's exactly what people need to kind of get them on the right track. We've been speaking with Damona Hoffman, dating expert, author, magazine columnist. She also has a dating relationship show called Dates and Mates. It's on Cool Change Radio. Damona, how else can people get in touch with you if they wanted to?
They can find me on my website. It's DearMrsD.com, and there I have all sorts of goodies. I have my book, D is for Dating, and I have a lot of free tips that people can take advantage of as well.
Damona, thank you so much for joining us, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you. You too, Scott.
You're listening to The Business of Living. I'm your host, Scott Ventrella. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back. You're listening to The Business of Living, the show that brings you strategies and practical solutions for managing your life and career. I'm your host, Scott Ventrella. Now, if you want to create the life you desire, how would you go about that? Have you ever really thought about that? The life that you desire? Yeah, I would imagine it has to start with you having some kind of an image, some kind of a picture in your mind as what that life might look like, and maybe also compare it with, you know, some people might be thinking, well, what's wrong with the life I'm living? Well, maybe having that perfect image, if that's at all possible, and comparing it to where you are now, therein lies maybe the opportunity, at least for making some improvements. But rather than me talk from my ignorance, we're going to speak with somebody who really knows something about this, Patricia Varley. Patricia has published an incredible set of works, among others, this is entitled Because You Matter, 10 Heart-Centered Principles for Creating the Life You Desire. Patricia is an international speaker, trainer, retreat, and workshop facilitator, author, and business and personal coach. Patricia focuses on integrating professional, personal, and spiritual growth, and she is also a certified Edgewalker facilitator. We'll ask her more about that as we get into the show. Patricia, welcome to The Business of Living, and thank you for joining
us. Thank you. Thank you so much, Scott. It's great to be on the show and to also speak with your audience today.
So listen, I love the title, 10 Heart-Centered Principles, and words aren't lost on me. You know, oftentimes you'll hear the 10 principles, the 10 strategies, etc. These are 10 heart-centered principles for creating the life you desire. Love to learn more about that, but I do have a question.
Sure.
Creating the life you desire, is the implication that, maybe I'm not living the life I desire? Or, you know, is this really for anybody? Do you have to have a certain amount of discontent or dissatisfaction to be thinking about creating the life you desire?
That's a great question, Scott. But no, not necessarily. I think that, you know, being a coach for so long and working with individuals and in groups in the capacity that I have, I believe that as human beings, we're here to evolve and to grow. And we can always, I think that most of us always can live and have a life and work and relationships that are even greater than we are now. So it's not about, many people may not be happy or may desire to have more than they do. But really my focus is, and my intention on this is to evolve more into our full potential and to know that it's possible for all of us to even be and do more than we already are. So from that capacity, you know, I feel that's where this was coming from. It's really a possible of evolution and expansion. Well, rather than I'm not enough.
No, listen, that is really, it's perfect. It really is, because one of the principles that I learned as a coach to businesses is the idea of, you know, never resting on one's laurels, never slipping into complacency. the idea that we should, in the organizational sense, always be striving for continuous improvement. There's a term in Japan, a Japanese term known as Kaizen, which essentially means the same thing. It is the whole idea of continuously improvement. So what you're saying is, in that spirit, let's create the life you desire using these 10 heart-centered principles, which are?
Exactly, Scott. I would agree with you. So we're on the same page about that. So the ten heart-centered principles for creating and living the life you desire are: the first one is the balance or integration principle. I mean, one of the things you mentioned is that what I do is really integrate professional, personal, and spiritual growth. So the balance integration principle is more of a holistic model. And these, by the way, build on each other. They're from a workbook that I use with teleclasses and with clients. So each one they're done in a particular order. The next one is number two is the values or integrity principle. When we are aligned with our values, we are in integrity with ourselves. And when we're in integrity with ourselves, we can live and create the life we desire. Number three is the authenticity or uniqueness principle. And that's knowing that each one of us has a unique expression, purpose, life, work that we're meant to live in this lifetime. And I find when people are living and creating from an authentic, unique place, they have peace, they have power, they have purpose, they're prosperous. Number four is the inspiration principle. It's really important to be inspired from within. And it's not about being motivated from without, but most people are motivated when internally they're inspired by something that really speaks to their heart or their mind or their life. Number five is the mission or greater purpose principle. And each one of us, I believe, regardless of what it is, whether we're being a mom or a CEO of a company or have our own business or we're a gardener or manager or teacher, it doesn't matter. We each have a greater purpose to express our uniqueness. And many people would call, like an organizational level, would say maybe a professional mission. But some of what I do with individuals work on a personal mission. Number six is the intuition principle. I'm very big on really assisting individuals and also leaders and connecting more with their intuitive knowing. We all have that gut feeling. It's so important to ultimately decide and know what our inner knowing will guide us to do in any decision in life. So that number six builds on the intuition principle. Number seven is the compassion principle. To have compassion and caring from the heart for self and other, whether it's a personal relationship, a company, a small business, whatever it may be, a client, boss relationship, is a practitioner, it's really important to have compassion and patience for self and other. All of this can, if we choose, lead to transformation. So number eight is the transformation principle. And the transformation principle is really about, if you look at the caterpillar to a butterfly, a butterfly, once it becomes a butterfly and transforms from a caterpillar, it never is a caterpillar again. So we're not talking about change. We're talking about transforming into that greater potential I talked about initially, into evolving and expanding into our greatest transformation. Number nine principle, that leads to mastery. And when we're truly the master of ourselves, we master our life. And that, as these principles build on each other, the mastery principle, number nine, is key to anyone living and creating the life that they desire. And number 10, finally, is the warrior principle or warrioress for the ladies out there. And as we build on all of these principles, we transform and we master, then we become the warrior, the warrioress of the creator of the life that we want. And part of it is also knowing that it's possible, because it's great to know the principles. But the key is really knowing that we are deserving and that it's possible to even create and have the life we desire. So those would be the 10 principles.
So thank you so much for that synopsis. Excellent synopsis, too. And I'm thinking that, you know, you work with individuals. You do one-on-one, very close coaching. You work with groups. Describe for us a little bit of who's the typical kind of person that seeks you out, whether in the group format or as an individual, for some of that one-on-one coaching?
Sure, Scott. I mean, I've actually been coaching for over 20 years. I mean, I was coaching when coaching was a sports coach. You know, coaching wasn't even an industry.
That's right.
And from my, speaking and training and all of that, I worked predominantly with groups. This is a facilitator. Individuals that say, I want to work with you one-on-one. And I find that many of the people I work with now, I mean, it's evolved over time. I have a passion for working with leaders, but also self-leadership. So if a lot of the people I work with now, I work with men and women, a lot of people are in transition. And the reason these principles are so important now is I find that that most people in some capacity are in change in their lives. I mean, the whole world is changing. The business climate is changing. People's relationships are changing. They're moving. And what we have known as the status quo is, I'm sure you would agree with me, there's so much blindsiding us, and for many people, it's exciting, but they don't always know how to navigate through change, or a lot of people need help. So I'm helping and coaching many individuals, professionals and individuals, men and women, in what I would call life and career transitions right now. That is not my only focus, but I'm finding that my coaching practice, which is 20 years old, is now evolving into assisting those individuals through ongoing coaching programs, and it's obviously customized for what the needs of the individual are, into actually evolving and transitioning effectively and efficiently into the next level of either their lives, relationship, or careers. But it's also, my tagline is reinventing success from the inside out. I initially really work on an inner level to help the individual, in a sense, go through some of the principles I just talked about, and then we become more strategic. That's the second part of the coaching. It was, okay, so it's great to know who I am. It's great to know what my values are. It's great to know where I am in my life and in my career, but now what do I do about it? So the second half of the coaching aspect is the accountability, the unconditional support, and the ongoing path that you take to really guide and navigate your life to the next level with consciousness and also very strategically with a plan. And I work at that level with individuals.
Now you mentioned, first of all, in the title, which I really love, the 10 heart-centered principles. What makes these heart-centered principles versus just, 10 principles for reinventing success from the inside out?
Well, they say the longest 18 inches is between the head and the heart. If everyone thinks of their head and the heart, for many people, there's a disconnect there, especially in business or in even creating their life. And I find that what the world needs now, I mean, we have the intellect, we have the intelligence, we all know what it is. We have the education for many people. But I really feel from what I've seen on an organizational level, an individual level, it's time to start igniting and reengaging our hearts. And a heart principle is more of a holistic principle, heart-centered, that brings in the whole person. And most of us, part of the workbook is called Because You Matter. I don't care if you're a CEO of a company or, a stay-at-home mom. We all want to feel we matter. We all want to feel that we have a contribution. And when we engage at the heart level, I feel it's a much more authentic, sometimes vulnerable, and yet authentic, more genuine way for us to kind of connect the dots, bringing the mind, the heart, the body, the intuition, a very holistic model as we move forward and grow in our lives. And it's important to bring more of who we are to what we do. I really feel that that's what both our relationships and even business is needing us to do right now, is to bring more of the human element, which is really a deeper level of the heart, of the place of where we care. It sounds so cliche and so obvious and so simple, but I think many of us have gotten way too into our heads,
mm-hmm.
and not integrated the heart. It's not that one or the other is good or bad. It's about integrating them. That's why it's an early principles integration, because they all need to be included to be much more effective, much more present, and much more healthy in our relationships. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And let me actually touch on that. So it's great you brought us full circle too, back to the the principles, because I wanted to double back and maybe ask a, may not have time to go through all of the 10, but I have a few questions around some of these. So when you talk about, you know, balance, integration, what comes to my mind is that how so many people tend to compartmentalize their lives. So, you know, I've got my spiritual life. So for some, that might mean, you know, services on a, you know, Friday night or, you know, Sunday going to Mass or to church. So I've got that neatly locked in there. And then, by the way, I've got my job, hopefully for most people. I've got my job or my work, and that's a different category and something different that I need to manage. Oh, yeah, but then there's my relationships and my health, but not to confuse the two. So this whole idea of compartmentalizing, and in the organizations we refer to that as siloing. So we kind of manage in silos versus more of an integrated or cross-functional or horizontal kind of management of life. Is that kind of what you're getting at with the balance integration principle?
Yes, Scott, I am. And having done a lot of organizational work in governments and in corporations myself, I mean, we used to talk a lot about the silo effect and how it really doesn't work as everyone becomes more isolated. Hmm. And the integration, if you look at even a family or a couple or or a small business or a corporation, we are interconnected. We're collective. We touch each other's lives. And yes, we all need space. We all need time alone. But as we are integrated as individuals, we bring more of who we are to every relationship, to every business meeting, to everything that we do. And the thing is that I'm not saying that we need to necessarily go meditate in a corporate office, so sometimes that might be good. But the thing is that for everyone to consider, and we know this, wherever we go, there we are. You know, we've heard that. We take ourselves with us everywhere we go in every situation that we go. So, for example, if in my private, you know, personal practice, like I might meditate or do yoga or I exercise or I walk in nature, let's say individually, to connect with my heart and those times of quiet to be with, let's say, Patricia. The more I cultivate that when I go into business or when I work with a client, more of me, more of my heart, more of my whole being is expanded. Does that make sense?
So it does, yeah.
I may not go into the corporate office and say, hi, you know, I'm here to do my spiritual practice, but because you've engaged your heart, because you've taken time to get centered or to work out, let's say, to have physical health, if you're physically healthy, you're more effective on the job. Mm. You're more effective in your marriage. You know, all of those things connect. So even though we may not do our work practices, let's say at home, though sometimes people bring work home, you know, how we show up at home is how we show up at work, even though it may look different. Does that kind of come together?
No, it really does.
We're a whole being, and if we disconnect the dots, the head, the heart, the gut feeling, even the physical health, we're not going to be as optimal in anything that we do, even though there are different boxes that we operate in and we show up in.
So you're saying, you know, work on and bring the total person to whatever it is, whether it's job, relationship, social situations. Bring the total person, the total you, and that does require some work. Got time for just a couple of more. Digging a little bit deeper in a couple of more of these principles. And selfishly, I'd like to just touch on the intuition principle. That was very interesting because I do work with personality assessments. Many people are familiar with Myers-Briggs that, among other of the dimensions or personality types, or includes this whole idea of the intuition. Now, in Myers-Briggs, of course, it suggests that, you know, some people have more of a preference for using intuition versus, you know, the five senses. Here's my question. Let's say in my personality, the way I'm wired, I rely more on the five senses versus intuition. Are you suggesting then perhaps then maybe the intuition principle, this whole idea of the inner knowing and connecting with intuitional knowing may not work for me? Or is it something I'm going to have to work harder to try to foster or develop?
Well, I think that's a great question. And I'm, you know, being an intuitive myself in the Myers-Briggs, it's very hard for me. But even being an intuitive myself, I've had to not only work at it, it's kind of like a muscle. I've actually had to acknowledge and give it voice and to know that it's actually, I think most is actually correct. I think most of us, regardless of our personality type, whether we lean more towards the head or the heart or the gut, we all have intuitive, we all have gut feelings. Wouldn't you say, Scott? I think everybody
Absolutely.
Gets some kind of, or they might go, you know, I don't know what it is, but something about this just doesn't feel right. That's the intuition. And many of us don't always recognize that that's what it is. So what I do in that principle is some people are more inclined than others, and that's okay. You know, we have to build on our strengths. But I think it is, there are practices, and it is a principle that, and myself included, again, being high intuitive, that we can work on, that we can consciously say, you know what, I want to strengthen this. I want to learn to trust it. I want to learn to allow and identify when all the facts on the table say do A, but something in my gut is like, I don't know about this. I think everyone listening probably has had that.
Your body might go,
this doesn't feel right. That's the gut. And I'm telling you, it's always right.
And sometimes we try to override that with, you know, intellectualizing something. But the idea of recognizing it and not ignoring it and maybe even, you know, listening to it and following up on that. We're speaking with Patricia Varley. Patricia is an international speaker, trainer, retreat, and workshop facilitator, author, business and personal coach, and among other works, she has this incredible program. It's also a published works, Because You Matter, 10 Heart-Centered Principles for Creating the Life You Desire. Patricia, how can people get in touch with you?
Thanks, Scott. First of all, I invite anyone to take a look at my website. You can email me through there. It's patriciavarley.com. Patricia, and it's V as in Victor, ARLEY.com. I also have an 800 number, 1-800-529-0063, 1-800-529-0063, or patriciavarley.com, and you can email me through there. And please, if anyone does contact me, let me know that you heard from me from Scott's show.
Thank you so much, Patricia. Really appreciate it. You have a wonderful day. And thank you for joining me today. Remember, you only have one life. Why not live it with purpose? This is Scott Ventrella for the Business of Living Show. So long, here at 1490 WGCH.